Today on Man Week, I'm happy to be interviewing the youngest ever editor of BLD magazine. He is Harry Mount, a prolific journalist who writes for Telegraph, The Spectator, and The Daily Mail, and many others. We're here today to talk about the Oldie magazine, which has been going now for 26 years. Hi, Harry. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hi, Josephine.
Man Week.
Yep.
You're only allowed on once a year, so
fantastic. Well, I'm just about a man, so yeah.
So what age can we start reading the Oldie magazine?
Well, I started reading it. I'm 47 now. I started reading the first issue when I was 21. So you can do it when you're as young as that. And we do have, we had letters the other day from a mother whose two daughter and her niece read it at age 14 and 13.
Excellent. Yeah. Now, it is known as an amusing read. So you do have cartoons in it, so it could appeal to all ages.
Yeah, no, the cartoons are incredibly important, as they were to my two predecessors, Richard Ingrams and the late, great Alexander Chancellor. We have about 25 in each issue. And the whole tone is supposed to be ironic and funny. Having said that, there will be some sad articles in there. But
you're talking about the content now, the mag.
Yeah. So even when we have a deeply sad article like the cover of the current issue, the December issue,
which is
on Blackadder, and it's written by John Lloyd, who is the producer of Blackadder.
And QI.
Mm. And he talks about that famous last scene in the last Blackadder series in the First World War when they all go over the top, Rowan Atkinson and all the rest of them. And people will remember it bleeds, fades out into a poppy field today. So John Lloyd talks about the very interesting filming of that series and that scene, but also that many of their characters were based on his own ancestors who had fought in the First and Second World War. So even in a sad tale like that, there's an unusual way into it, and there's funny stuff in there as well, even in a sad story.
So what's the idea of the Oldie? I heard it was a magazine created because it was created in the Groucho Club, because Richard Ingrams had just stopped being editor of Private Eye.
Yeah.
He bumped into Richard Hislop and he said, hey, what are you doing now? You're going to start a magazine called The Oldie.
Oh, well, I've heard that story and I'm sure that's true. But it's also set up with the help of the late, great Auburn War, who had a column called Rage. And he noticed something that was true then in 1992, is even truer today, that advertisers are falling over themselves to appeal to the young, who we're also appealing to in The Oldie. But they miss out older people who, as well as there being lots of them in the country, they've got all the money. And so it's not just for old people, but it was founded with that idea that an awful lot of magazines have become obsessed with youth.
Yeah, well, it's because they want those big advertisers like Dior, Dolce and Gabbana. I mean, it's all about, you know, brands, isn't it?
Well, exactly. But we know the poor old 20-year-olds are completely broke, whereas the last generation with final pension schemes who've paid off their mortgages are the slightly older ones.
So what is the average age then?
Yeah, I'm very proud to say we've just had a survey, and whereas the previous survey 6 years ago, the average age of the average reader was 70, I've brought it down to 68.
Oh, well done.
So
that means you've definitely got some young people in.
Yeah.
So tell me about regular features. Who are your regular writers?
Well, they're quite unusual. People will have heard of Giles Wood from Gogglebox, from Giles and Mary.
And what does he talk about?
He's got a column called Country Mouse. He's a country mouse to Tom Hodgkinson, who's my age, editor of The Idler, who does Town Mouse about London life. But Giles Wood is a perfect example of someone who's got the complete oldie tone down perfectly, which is to be amusing, ironic, not grumpy, but at one remove from the rest of the world going on. And just to be funny, he's incredibly funny. And very few of the oldie columnists are like columnists in other magazines and papers responding to the news. We do have Stephen Glover from The Mail, who talks about media and newspapers and magazines. But it's not pegged to politics, which you can find in all the other magazines and newspapers. It's just to be, the only aim is to be interesting or funny or sad or all three things.
And does it, you know, why is it different than Saga magazine? Because obviously people think, or Age Concern magazine. It,
Well, very few pieces are about being old. We do have an oldie doctor, Dr. Theodore Dalrymple, who took over from Dr. Thomas Stutterford, who sadly died earlier this year, who will inevitably talk about older people's ailments. But otherwise, it's one of the things I'm keen to do is that very few articles will be expressly about being old. What you will have, the great advantage of having older readers, is you don't have to explain things. You don't have to say Charles Dickens, a famous Victorian novelist. Or earlier on this year, we had a fantastic piece by the great Barry Cryer about Tony Hancock, who anyone, I'm 47, anyone over the age of 40 knows exactly what a genius Tony Hancock is. Younger people may not necessarily have heard of him. If you haven't heard of him, you have to spend quite a lot of a piece explaining who he is, whereas Barry Cryer, who knew Tony Hancock very well, could write about him, what he was like as a very funny performer, but a sad individual off stage. And he didn't have to waste breath and editorial space explaining who Tony Hancock was, and that applies to so many of the pieces.
So it's a bit of a club then, sort of once you start reading it, it's like, this is for me, I know, they're not having to explain this, but they're talking directly to me as opposed to sort of the British public.
Exactly, and also that sort of informal club gets irony and outspokenness and rudeness, so it's a great relief in this world which I think is becoming, it's an overused expression, but massively politically correct. Oldies, and that's lowercase oldies, people of any age who read the magazine, are much, much less likely to be offended. When I was interviewed for the job by Mr. James Pembroke, I asked him what the sexometer level was on articles, how much sex I could put in. He said, it's off the charts. And it's the case at our oldie lunches. We have a literary lunch once a month with three distinguished speakers.
But can I just put in that you are the only regular literary lunch in the UK?
Only regular. And we have these fantastic literary lunches held in Simpsons in the Strand in London. But we actually were branching out. We had one in Gibraltar a couple of weeks ago. And we have them at literary festivals like Marlborough or Ilkley. Anyway, there they start at 12. And they go on till after three on the whole. And because oldies tend to be better off, and also quite a lot of them retired, they don't have to rush off. But also, they love a good joke. And Barry Cryer, who is our MC, can tell really very outrageous jokes. And he's not offending people. But if you chose to be offended, you're the sort of person who's like that, you could be offended. But it's free of that terrible humorlessness, which I think is taking over in lots of parts of British society.
So it's open-mindedness, like a chuckle, and interested in lots of various different things. Can you tell me the sort of articles that will be in there?
Well, I'll give you a good example. In the latest issue, the Christmas issue, about to come out next week, we've got Valerie Grove, our radio reviewer.
She was a Sunday Times columnist.
And she was on the Times and the Sunday Times for a very long time. And she was appointed by Richard Ingrams 26 years ago. And an awful lot of our columnists are women, because although we've only had male editors, all three editors, I'd say, including me, not only like the company of women, not true of all men, but also see how many brilliant women journalists there are. So we've got Valerie Grove talking to Marx and Grand, Lawrence Marx and Maurice Grand, the fantastic scriptwriters who wrote Alan Bastard, Birds of a Feather. They're just both about to turn 70. Goodnight, Sweetheart, as well. That's another good example where readers will have seen at least one of their series, and she goes back to their early days of how they first met. Anyway, it's a completely eclectic, varied group of articles. It could be about anything. So many of your listeners will have heard of Bruff Scott, the very distinguished racing presenter who's been on telly for 45 years. But before that was a jockey, won over 100 races, and he talks about Boxing Day racing. Boxing Day is a huge day in the steeplechasing calendar. And he talks about the terror of racing and the snow and the ice, but he also talks about the biggest ever scandal in French racing, which took place in Boxing Day. And
is that a bit of a scoop, then?
I think it probably is, but again, it's about knowing these figures who will be familiar to older readers, but also finding out new things about them. Mm-hmm. I knew that I'm a bit of a racing fan. I knew he was a great racing presenter. I didn't know he'd won over 100 races as a jockey. And there's all sorts of things. We've got an article by an American actress called Misty Trier talking about the new Mary Poppins film, which is coming out.
Excellent. Now, how does she know about it? Or has she seen it before us?
She hasn't, but she noticed a very good fact that we all tease poor old Dick Van Dyke in the original Mary Poppins for having a terrible...
For his accent.
Exactly. Core striker like Mary Poppins. And he's been much mocked, and he admits he was terrible. But actually, she makes a brilliant point that we're so pleased with ourselves, us British people, for producing brilliant actors. Actually, she's Californian, this actress, Misty Trier. British people are very bad at doing American accents.
See, whenever I hear them on the screen, they sound perfect to me, but I don't know what a good American accent is.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And she makes a really good point but also when British people try to do American accents, they never go far enough. They think it's right to go, morning, how are you, going to have a McDonald's? But actually, they move much, much, much further. Real American accents are much more extreme. And there are many different ones.
Of course.
There's a Deep South, there's a Midwest, there's a New York.
Yeah, I didn't even know there's like each city. Boston has an accent, you know.
Boston
like,
has a very thick accent.
But it's like everywhere, you know, Chicago. I didn't really, because now I'm a good friend's American woman. She was like, oh yeah, everywhere's got a different accent, whereas we just think it of sort of mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's exactly the same way that Americans are not going to be able to tell the difference between your native Yorkshire Josephine and a Cockney accent. Anyway, that's a brilliant original article.
In fact, I'm very interested in accents. I'm going to read that one.
Oh, yeah, they're gripping. And then we have our regular columnists, again, many women columnists. Alice Pittman, who does The Home Front, which is about her, as she would describe it, suburban lifestyle in Surrey. Alexander Chancellor recruited a nun, Sister Teresa, who talks about her approach to God every time in a completely original way.
Is it quite funny then?
Well, she just, I wouldn't say it was so much funny, but original. So for Christmas, she's done a brilliant piece about, she last year got a fantastic Renaissance Christmas card of a picture of Christ and the Virgin Mary done by Filippino Lippi. And Christ is holding a pomegranate and stuffing his face with a pomegranate. And she explains why the pomegranate is the symbol not just of fertility, but also of the passion of the death of Christ. So here is this little boy being born, obviously, at Christmas, but his death being prefigured.
But if you eat enough pomegranates, you might give birth to the next saviour.
You might already have done so, Josephine. And then our agony aunt, Virginia Ironside, who used to be a columnist for us.
She's very famous, isn't she?
She's very famous. She's been an agony aunt for 40 years. Mm. And she actually has made the agony column slightly racier. We're having quite a lot of correspondence about Viagra. One woman wrote in saying she's really very tired of her husband taking Viagra and the...
Tiring
her out, quite literally. And then the following week, I'll give you a scoop in the issue out next week. There's a wife who's longing for her husband to take Viagra. So the sexometer is off the charts.
They've got to meet each other. Yeah, just wife
exactly,
swap.
Exactly, yeah. And we've got, again, just completely original, which you won't find a similar column anywhere else in the British or international press. Lucinda Lambton, the great, quirky, unusual architectural historian, every 4 weeks. We come out every 4 weeks, not every month. It's got a brilliant piece on called Overlooked Britain, which is an unusual bits of Britain, which she knows so well, but she always spots the unusual. So in the last issue, she went to a church in Wimborne in Dorset. Mm-hmm. Fantastic church built by the Lord Shaftesbury's family, famous for stopping chimney sweeps and the Statue of Eros in Piccadilly Circus. She points out that in the next door, St. Giles House, where the current Lord Shaftesbury lives, he's just erected a new Eros, pointing in the direction all the way, 150 miles away, to Piccadilly Circus. And the one in Piccadilly Circus points all the way back
fabulous.
To Dorset.
Yeah.
So it's just full of the original and the unusual and
so
things
if
you won't
you
find
thirst,
anywhere else.
Yeah, thirst for quirkiness, interesting.
Exactly.
Also, I've heard that magazines which have a lot of content, which yours really does, I mean, it's very thick, it has a lot of pages, and the articles are quite long, they are going up. More people want better information. As newspapers go down, there's less and less, they're getting flimsy and flimsier, and they're written by sort of 25-year-old interns, the articles. This is really good writers, isn't it? And they are going into kind of quite in-depth subjects and quirky subjects.
Well, that's right. And I used to work on daily papers, without mentioning them by name. Actually, many of them have tried to join a race for the bottom. They're trying to take on the internet and BuzzFeed, so they produce loads of lists, become obsessed with celebrities. And not surprisingly, their circulation has gone down. Whereas quality magazines like The Oldie, and dare I mention our rivals like The Spectator and Prospect, are doing incredibly well because they know the truth, which is that contrary to popular opinion, an awful lot of people in Britain still are able to read, and they like to read. And if you go, or your listeners go, to a literary festival like the one we've both just been to in Gibraltar, they're completely packed with highly educated, interesting people who've read many more books than I have. They've read all the latest books, and they're longing for a good read. They don't want to read yet another trashy 10 things you didn't know about Britney Spears. They want well-written, juicy articles. They don't want them for a moment to be boring, but to be, as I say, interesting, sad, funny, or all three.
I love it. So when you're making editorial ideas, that's always on your kind of remit, is it?
Definitely. And yeah, you can also see when ideas come in, and we're very keen, Aldi's always been very keen on readers writing for us, but you can tell.
Oh, great. So yeah, if you're a budding writer, you've got ideas, you can tell me how it works then.
Well, I've just put up some new guidelines on the website today. If you go to the aldi.co.uk, there are guidelines on contributions. And it's exactly that. Interesting, sad, or funny, or all three. Better from the point of view of not wasting listeners' time. They send in an idea of around 200 words rather than writing the whole piece. And it may or may not come off. You can tell in, there's a sort of almost like a smell test. You can tell in a second whether it's one of those three things, just like that, whether it's, it's going to interest you and interest other people. So we have one in the latest issue by Jane O'Grady. We've got a great series called Olden Life and Modern Life. What was something in the old days? What is a new thing? And she referred to, she was a reader I'd never heard of. She'd sent in an idea about this. Maybe you'd heard of it. I never had. This collective in the early 70s called Frestonia, or Freestonia, which was based around somewhere called Freston Road, or Freeston Road, don't know how you pronounce it, in West London. And a group of progressive hippies, I mean in a complimentary way, tried to set up their own separate state, free of war and commerce and all the rest of it, with their own foreign secretary. I mean, it didn't take off in the end, but it encapsulated an age at the time.
Utopian ideas.
Exactly, yeah. And thus I'm sure Frestonia was inspired by Utopia. But anyway, it was quite big news in the early 70s, and this man called Nicholas Albury helped set it up, wrote a book about it. Anyway, that's something that's perfect. I bet you a lot of our readers had heard of it, and I shamefully hadn't, but completely illuminates your mind. Immediately thought, that's immediately interesting, so commissioned it.
Great, so... Yeah. Even readers can get involved with a magazine. This is so exciting. Yeah. How and where can we buy The Oldie?
Well, you can buy it in WH Smith's and at Waitrose. And very excitingly, from next year at Marks & Spencer.
Oh, wow.
But most of our readers do subscribe. And the best way to subscribe is to go online to theoldie.co.uk.
And you get a better rate if you subscribe.
And you get a much, much better rate. Yeah.
So how good would this be as a Christmas present or a gift for an aunt, an uncle, a mother, a father, a brother?
It's absolutely, I would say this, wouldn't I? But it's absolutely perfect. And you've still got time to get it for your mother, father, aunt, brother, child, grandson. Cleverly, they will get a card on the day. They won't get the actual magazine before Christmas, unless you want them to.
They get a card saying hi, you're going to get a subscription to The Oldie, welcome on board.
Exactly.
But it comes in January.
Or you can choose for it to arrive before then.
And what about digital? So say if you're abroad or you travel a lot and you don't want the actual magazine itself, do you have a digital?
You would do. We've got an app, which is an even better deal. And also, actually, we just went to press on Friday and the app will be available tomorrow, but the actual issue won't be out in hard copy form for another week. So you get it a week earlier.
I bet you like reading it like that.
Well, I now get to read it very early because I've seen it before.
You've typed it in.
I've typed it in, exactly. And also, we also have our website has been booming over the last year. It's more than doubled. We have loads of blogs. One, often two or three new articles a day, which don't go into the magazine, and those are free for anyone who goes onto the website, and they've doubled in the past year.
It's fantastic. Yeah. You've done brilliantly. So how much do you enjoy being editor of Yale?
Well, I absolutely adore it. I don't know if your listeners know, but you're closely attached to the publisher of the Oldie, but I'll leave it at that. I absolutely love it because I read it before from, as I say, from when I was 21. And it's an absolute, we're in the office here, and it's a very, very small team of extremely nice, entertaining people. And it's just what could be more enjoyable than trying to find amusing, interesting, or sad articles. And then the other thing is, you are never going to perfect it and say, right, that's it, done it, made the perfect magazine. Sometimes you come up with an idea and a brilliant writer does it perfectly, but you're never going to have 100 pages. It's a thick thing where every single article is perfect and every single time the idea was perfect.
So you enjoy it because it's always, you're always on the go then. You're always thinking of new ideas, always collecting ideas, always chatting to people. It's a never-ending... party for you.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that's true. And it's eminently, it's always improvable. And you can have an idea. It's incredibly enjoyable coming up with ideas. Also, all the writers can come up with ideas as well. And then you try and think of the perfect person to do it. And then very rarely do you ever get even close to perfection. So it's a constantly improvable quest.
And since you started, Harry, has newsstand sales, have they improved?
They have gone up overall a tiny bit. There's been the odd issue, which hasn't... But overall, they've gone up. And that also is incredibly exciting when that happens. It's also really interesting trying to isolate reasons why
an issue's done well. Yeah, one magazine does better than the other.
And it's usually the cover. But you don't know for sure, obviously, before that it's going to work. But
what's your cover for Christmas? Because I know that that's your best-selling magazine.
We've got the brilliant writer Alan Johnson, former Home Secretary, who has reinvented himself brilliantly and prolifically as a writer. He's written 4 books in 4 years, which are autobiography about his life, rough times in Notting Hill in the 50s. His latest one is remembering the fantastic pop music of the 50s. And he's written a wonderful piece about Christmas 1959 when he was 9 and the joy of listening to his sister's dance set and listening to the light programme. And I came up with this idea actually at one of our oldie lunches at Ilkley where he was talking and completely packed, sold out, lovely ladies from Yorkshire. And he referred to the light programme and he referred to Everly Brothers.
And the light programme was pre kind of Radio 2, wasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And he referred to the Everly Brothers and it was one of their songs, like, I can't remember which one it was, but there was an intake of breath because people just remembered that world because they'd been around in the late 50s. And that thing when you go... Oh, God, I recognise that. Yeah. And I thought it really... We all know music goes straight to the heart, doesn't it? But anyway, he's written a very powerful piece about his... You know, as I said...
So what's on the cover, then?
So that's Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree.
Wow.
Alan Johnson remembers Christmas 1959 with a lovely 1959 cartoon done now by Bob Wilson, which shows Santa dancing around a 50s Christmas tree with a little boy and a little girl who are loosely Alan Johnson and his sister.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous and explaining who the elder reader is, how you create ideas, and how easy it is to buy the Eldie.
Well, thank you so much, Josephine. It's fantastic to be on Radio Gorgeous.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming on to Man Week.
Fantastic. Thanks.
And for more amazing interviews, you can always try Radio Gorgeous. Thanks for listening.